Kevin Sinclair here with Irish Illustrated, back for Tracking the Trail, our new recruiting podcast. Here with Eric Thomas. We're going to get right into it. Eric, Mark Zachary, his commitment decision's coming. What do you think?
Yeah, obviously announced for the 25th of this month, so we're rounding into the 10-day mark here. Really, you know, confident that this is going to be a good news for the Irish. Obviously, everything is still up in the air when it hasn't been announced yet, but all indications at this point seem to be positive news for Notre Dame and Mike Mickens. It's just another sort of testament to the job that Mike Mickens has done with this room. You know, obviously the article that I wrote, I guess it was last week now, that kind of went into and just detailed how he has increased the average ranking of the recruits coming into a 4-star level from like a, you know, low or a high 3-star, excuse me, low 4-star range-ish kind of level. That's a massive improvement for the overall quality of material they're bringing into this room. And Zachary fits right into that trend. As we've talked about extensively, he's a great athlete, really unique sort of player in terms of his length, his ability to elevate and his ability to switch direction, especially turning around. So he's a really excellent grab for Notre Dame if they can go ahead and secure that on the 25th.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I believe that's going to happen. I think he's been training that way for quite a while. I just, initially way back months ago when I started doing more homework on him, I realized his dad was on the Ben Davis coaching staff over there in Indianapolis and spoke with him. And one thing that stood out to me about the conversation was that it was really clear his mom, as a lot of moms are, was big on the idea of, you know, her son going to school somewhere close to home. And on top of that, when I asked his dad, went to Ben Davis, played football there, his football coach, knows football. I brought up how, you know, talented he is in basketball. And it's just sort of like, hey, you know, what is it about your son? You know, if you were to just sort of pick one thing that's, you know, really special about him, what would it be? And he actually said it's his intelligence. It's actually his smarts and his mental makeup, not just in football, but and not just on defense as a defensive back, but as a wide receiver. And then also as a point guard, his basketball film, those who are listening, I'm sure many of you have seen it. And if you haven't, go ahead and check it out. Man, he's an outstanding basketball player. So special kid there. And then just big picture, I think I was saying it to you the other day, Eric, Mark Zachary, we'll see what happens there on the 25th. We both like Notre Dame, but even without him, we're talking about one class with two top 100 defensive backs from Florida in Ivan Taylor and Dallas Golden, you know, both really special players. And how not long ago that would have seemed impossible for Notre Dame. You know, what do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely really exciting that we are seeing such a dramatic shift in the defensive backs rooms to the point where it's becoming almost routine to see these higher rankings and see these guys coming in. And the excitement is that there is still another addition out there for them. You know, we talked about sort of the upcoming visits. Obviously, Jadon Blair out of North Carolina is someone that they're still looking at to add to that defensive backs room. He's a really exciting prospect. He booked his official visit for the June weekend. I think he's the June 7th one with all the other defensive guys.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's going to be a great group. I'm really interested in sort of talking about the upcoming visits. I'm really interested in the orientation of the schedule. The fact that they got the big group of defensive guys to all come together, they're kind of getting the position groups to go together to not only build that camaraderie, but also obviously just put that social pressure on guys who are not committed. Hey, here's this big group of guys who are all a part of this thing. They're all excited to be a part of this thing. And the whole weekend, they're going to be in your ear about why you should be too. Mm-hmm. I really think that that's a fun an effective way for them to orient this weekend and not only maximize the individual experiences, but also ultimately give themselves more tools to work with in a more casual setting almost from the, you know, these peers of the uncommitted prospects.
No, I agree. And, you know, you bring up Blair. I mentioned it in midweek recruiting right now last week. This was just sort of by coincidence, someone I've known for many years. He happened to be at pretty much every event in Notre Dame's whole spring camp. I was just having a conversation with him, and I asked him about, you know, There was a lot of recruits who came through pretty much daily. And did anyone stand out? And he said, yeah, there was this 6'4" safety from North Carolina. He's like, my God, Kevin, this kid, you know, physically, like from afar, he looks like a grown man. And then you see him and he's a teenager and he just, you know, with all that length, I'm sure that Kyle Hamilton himself would be, you know, a good selling point for them. So we talk about Ethan Long, Ivan Taylor, the odds of Blair coming in. Eric, you talked to his coach recently. What stood out about that?
Overall, I came away really impressed with that conversation. It's definitely a program that is full of talent. You can tell that the coach who's been there, he's an alumnus, really takes pride in being able to lead the program that he came up through. I think that with Blair's recruitment specifically, I definitely got a sense that at various points over the last year, Notre Dame has definitely been in the lead, particularly here, probably more in the last 6 months. He mentioned that Notre Dame and Penn State were the sort of longest tenured in pursuit of Blair's talents, and Michigan was sort of a latecomer. But it was made very clear to me that despite being late to the party, Michigan had done a great job of bridging that gap and sort of developing those relationships and those foundations for future re relationship development that they needed to be a serious contender. At this point, I do expect, despite the fact that he has 7 official visits, it's going to come down to those three. And it wasn't stated to me, but my impression just from, following the industry whispers and kind of having spoken to people in his orbit, my sort of implicit understanding is that Notre Dame and Michigan have maybe separated themselves even from Penn State a little bit. I don't think Penn State's out of it, but they probably have more work to do at the point of official visit than the other two.
And I just think about the, you know, the ability for certain teams or programs, sorry, to make an impact and like, you know, maybe push ahead through like an official visit. I mean, come on, Marcus Freeman, his ability to, you know, with parents, his charisma, you know, his genuine nature, Mike Mickens, and others, they're gonna have a good shot there to kind of, you know, put the ball across the goal line. And then, you know, aside from that. Recently, a couple of official visit dates have been set from elite linebackers, Nathaniel Owusu-Boateng being one of them. I remember speaking with him probably a good year ago. And when I asked him about his brother and him, and, you know, the fact he played at Notre Dame, had such a great career, he kind of like steered that aside a bit and was really like, I'm going to carve my own path here. It's not really going to be about my brother and where he played, but. Recently, I spoke with someone who had just had a conversation with Owusu-Boateng, and he was saying, you know, is it a much different tune? Like, hey, you know what? My brother went there. He did really well. Maybe I could follow that legacy. And that was just a much, much different attitude toward that component that is an obvious component with him. I thought that was interesting. What an incredible player. And then another top 100 linebacker, Madden Framo from California. Also booking a visit for that same weekend. So man, what a weekend. Hey, Eric.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, when anytime you can get two linebackers of that caliber on campus, it's going to be a major, major weekend. Now, obviously, the odds of Notre Dame landing both of those guys are probably not significantly high, but ultimately, the opportunity to land one of the two is significant in and of itself. And when it comes to both of them, I mean, they're both obviously really dynamic players. The change in tone from Owusu-Boateng specifically is obviously a major improvement for Notre Dame. It's not that they were in bad standing before, but anytime you have a borderline five-star prospect who is sort of moving away from the natural connections and advantages you have in their recruitment, you want to make sure that that stuff goes in a more positive frame, gets top of mind. So the change of attitude definitely has to be encouraging. Faramo booking his visit is significant. I think that Notre Dame has felt confident about their standing with him from what we've been able to pick up, but there was a little bit of like, hey, we need to get this scheduled. Like, let's get this going. So now that it's officially on the books, I think that there is probably a little bit of a sigh of relief in South Bend. Like, okay, we are where we thought we were. Like, we got this on the books, because it just seemed to drag out from we are going to schedule this to the actual date a couple weeks longer than we anticipated.
Yeah, he's been one of the more difficult to kind of track and get a feel for the whole The whole way. Like I remember last June, he visited. I believe it was early June, or at least the first half of the month, and then hadn't really seen. He didn't take many visits at all. I know I talked to one of our colleagues who covers one of the other teams that are in his top group, and said that he was supposed to visit for a game, or maybe for a game, and then he ended up not visiting. Supposed to visit for a later game, ended up not visiting. So everyone had a hard time sort of getting a feel there, and I thought it might be the feel until the end, and he makes his decision. Kingston Viliamuasa was somewhat similar, but yeah, Owusu Boateng, I look at him kind of similar to Viliamuasa last cycle, in that he's ranked in the top 100, but if you really dig into him and his film and his ability, it's really hard to make the argument that there's a better linebacker in the class than him. That's how I felt about Kingston last cycle, and I think Nathaniel's very, very similar in this cycle. And then, sort of segueing from there, talking about just kind of expanding horizons in recruiting in general. Recently, an Australian punter. What did you think when that news popped up, Eric?
Yeah, look, it's definitely a trend that we've seen more and more. So I think when you see Aussie style punter, it's never really fully surprising anymore. But when you see from Australia, like they went down under and got the guy, that's a little bit different. So it's definitely an exciting approach, and once again, just sort of a testament to the creativity of the staff and finding talent. I know you kind of dove into with your research and your reporting sort of the pipeline from Australia to the United States and all the kickers that are coming through. And there's a unique element of international athletes and the upbringings they have, the training they do when they're younger, and kind of how that can provide unique perspective, if nothing else, sort of within the space of college football. And I'm very, very fascinated in not only, this acquisition for our special teams moving forward this year, but kind of looking ahead, even looking at guys like Will Black, like Canadian prospects. I'm just really interested to see where this goes and how the influx of international players continues to grow, especially if that at some point doesn't have to involve them coming to the US to play football to get that significant exposure, because that's a major hurdle for 90% of these kids.
No doubt. Just someone I had met again, just by coincidence, years ago. It was a guy who's an Aus he's not an Australian who, same thing, came over, played Division One football. He was a kicker, like a place kicker, and not a punter, but I played at SMU, and I asked him about that and what he thought, and he said, it used to be more rare, but now it's like if you were to look in like the SEC, or at least just the entire Southeast, all levels of college football, he said, I wouldn't be surprised if it was like half the teams down there have an Australian punter or place kicker. He kind of was like jokingly like, you'll hear an Australian accent or twang in the locker room, and probably half the schools down there. So it's a growing thing, and now Notre Dame is in that hunt too, and they have these great kickers. The way I understand it from of speaking with James Randell was, and speaking with others, is basically you play. It's a very serious sport over there. It's a huge following. They love it over there, and they have sort of youth and sort of high school levels, and then what they have is bridging the gap kind of between that sort of high school level and then the pro level is that it's called the junior level. Right. And a lot of, the junior level, you have to be very, very good just to play there. And
Absolutely.
then only the very best of the best of the best in the junior level make it to the pro level. And James apparently was just barely, didn't quite make it to that pro level, but he's 6'6", 225 pounds. His dad was a superstar. The guy I spoke with, who was a kicker at SMU, he actually played with James' older brother, who said the most prominent, Australian football family sort of out there. So, how about it? 6'6", 225. Just maybe someone, breaks through coverage, the ability for him to, tackle, but also just the power. Like, man, what do you make of that?
Yeah, no, that's unique size. I mean, look, anytime your punter is actually a threat to make a play, making a tackle or anything, that's always a plus. But the first thing I thought of when I saw his size was Oh God, what's his name? The old Alabama punter from probably like 8, 10 years ago. I think he played for the Packers.
Right. I'm
Dude was
drawing a
like
blank
six
too.
five and he had like pendulum legs. I mean, he was just launching them into orbit. That's sort of what I anticipate. And obviously, from our reporting, it sounds like the gripe with the previous punting experience was the hang time. It was just an issue of allowing the coverage to get downfield. When you have someone who has that level of length and an ability to just generate power, that's definitely a good outlook for being able to, at least have the tools to generate that hang time. Obviously, if they're going down to Australia to get him, it sounds like he's already developed that skill set to a point where it should be an improvement immediately.
Yeah, no doubt. And when I spoke with him, just to sort of sum it up, when I spoke with him over the phone, Marty Biaggi had already been there for days. And just as like a side note, these coaches on the road and they have to go to, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, wherever, Connecticut, different places. Marty Biaggi, during this evaluation period, he got to go out to Australia, hang out there for like several days. And then I don't know if he went somewhere else before this, but then he got to go out to Hawaii to check in on Kahanukia. And I just thought, oh man, this guy's got some
He's
good
taken
dice.
over the Brian Polian trophy for most
Yeah.
envied guy in the office.
Yeah. When it comes to the coaches on the road, I agree. And so, yeah, anyways, I just thought interesting story. The guy, he was really, really well spoken. He's saying, like, hey, look, I live in Australia, but everyone knows what Notre Dame is. There's people walking around here in this town I'm in with Notre Dame apparel on. I'm so happy to go there. He seemed like a really bright guy, but he's a 23-year-old guy, and he just had a bit of an edge to him. I don't mean like he had a screw loose or something. I'm talking like he just seemed like a kind of guy who can handle himself. He's mature. He seemed like a talking to him over the phone, he seemed like a tough dude. So I'm going to be really interested to see how that sort of shapes up. And then, Eric, kind of a similar topic, going international here. We're seeing more and more sort of Canadian recruits, but you kind of dug in deeper into the American regional and state by state breakdown of how Notre Dame sort of went all over the map under Brian Kelly, and then how they've been sort of going after recruits in general under Marcus Freeman from a sort of state by state standpoint. And you had some interesting findings there. What were some things that sort of like really stuck out to you?
Yeah, the research was really interesting. I mean, obviously, relationships are such a fundamental part of recruiting that I think we talk about, but it's not so much we don't I don't think, and myself included in the we don't necessarily correctly underscore that because it's difficult to rank that. But you look at the lifetimes of relationships that the staff has built in Ohio, even beyond Marcus Freeman. Mike Mickens is from there. Obviously Al Washington has origins there. Chad Bowden has origins there. And I know there was one other one as well on staff that I'm not remembering now. But there's an extensive network of relationships in Ohio. That's doubled Notre Dame's output in the state. You can see that they have a lot of young guys from the state who are sort of primed to make their way into rotations this year and ultimately starting roles next year. So the early returns on that haven't necessarily been early impact, but there's definitely some long-term positivity to take from it. And I like that they're dipping into the Buckeye State because as much as we look at Ohio State as sort of like this national juggernaut, they can pick and choose who they want in their backyard. There have been programs, Michigan included, Kentucky included, that have made a very good living going into Ohio, picking their spots, and winning those fights. With the advantages relationships-wise that Notre Dame has in the Buckeye State, I presume that they could also find that level of success. And not only sort of, at the Kentucky and, to a step or two higher Michigan level in the state, but ultimately they have the credibility to challenge against Ohio State. We've seen it in some of these recruiting battles. They don't always go Notre Dame's way. They might not even majority of the time go Notre Dame's way, but they have the credibility to challenge. And ultimately that's the place they need to be in, as opposed to where they were before, where they were sort of backing off prospects in Ohio. A couple other ones I think were important, and I want to throw this one to you, is Georgia. Georgia was a major, major emphasis under the Brian Kelly era, especially in the last sort of 5 to 6 years. They made significant investment in the private school networks outside Atlanta. That number has just shrunk entirely. I mean, they had 10 over, the 4 cycles that I looked at under BK. Now for Marcus Freeman, we're looking at 4, and I believe one or two of those were in the 2022 class. that was split between the two of them. So I'm interested to get your thoughts because I know you've done extensive research and work on Notre Dame's connections and investment in Georgia, sort of when that was happening and how that scaled back. I'm interested to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, you and I talked about it, but just briefly before this. But yeah, like you're sort of you're with us at Irish Illustrated. It's your early days, and you're digging into this. And back when I was sort of in your shoes, I think it was probably my first year at Irish Illustrated. I'd heard through the grapevine that Notre Dame was going to be focusing a lot more on Georgia, and at that time, like Tyler Newsome, Isaac Rochelle, Stephon Tuitt, I might be forgetting one or two, or TJ Jones were the most kind of recent recruits they got out of Georgia at that time, and that was years ago. So at this time, it was about 2018. So this is going into the 2019 cycle, and so they really didn't have much activity there, like at all. But what they found was a lot more of the higher end recruits in Georgia had the academic profile to get into Notre Dame. They were recruitable for Notre Dame at a much higher rate compared to recruits in Florida, Texas, California, other hotspots, so to speak. I really tapped into that. I ended up speaking with someone from the school board. It turned out that they'd poured a whole bunch of money into the public schools. They really wanted to raise the college bound student percentages, the GPA, the average GPA, that sort of thing. And it was paying off. On top of that, a lot of families were moving to Atlanta from out of state, and going to private schools. And look how that sort of shaped up. That 2019 class, Kyle Hamilton, KJ Wallace, JD Bertrand, the year before that, Tommy Tremble from the same area, later on, Jaden Thomas, and so on, right? All these great players. And so Georgia paid off very well. And it's not that Notre Dame's going to stop recruiting Georgia, but there's still good things happening across, coast to coast. And one of those things I think is really interesting is North Carolina. Sam Pendleton and Sullivan Abshur and Jack Larson. And then we just saw Bryce Young and Micah Gilbert, very important members of this incoming 2024 class. What a score. And we've been covering other recruits from there, like safety Nick Reddish, who we really like, and several others. So, that's a really interesting topic to sort of keep getting into. And then I think just to sort of wrap this up, I think if there's a topic that sort of draws maybe some concern from Notre Dame fans is, defensive line recruiting. And, Eric, I was talking to you recently about that defensive lineman out of Marist in Chicago, Brad Fitzgibbon. I'm sure you saw him, but what do you kind of think of like that defensive tackle kind of concern a lot of Notre Dame fans seem to have? And what did you see sort of in Brad when you checked out his film?
Yeah, so on the wider scale question first, I mean, the answers are a bit limited. It's 2025. You're looking for guys that are more likely to ultimately flip, or you're getting in the game late, or you're ultimately looking for late risers. Three groups may sound like a big population to pick from, but ultimately, when you start to dive into those, especially for committed prospects, your options narrow very quickly, and that's what Notre Dame's discovering in 2025. The sort of other consequence you're seeing here is this cycle, and this has been talked about extensively on the 24/7 network of media podcasts. I know the Cover 3 podcast has talked about this. There was a lot of interest across the country in adding defensive linemen, specifically defensive tackles, and the vast majority of the players expected to enter the portal have either stayed home or they have ended up having a much, much higher price tag than schools initially anticipated when they approached the conversation a few months ago. So, what this is putting pressure on for Notre Dame is you're basically looking at this as, well, we can't necessarily count on getting the impact defensive tackles out of the portal. The market there has shifted much more at high bidder and retention, which the latter is a market Notre Dame very much wants to be in. The former is not really where they've wanted to be, other than picking their spots, right? Picking the right guys. So for them, it's really going to be an emphasis on one, identifying risers, like what we're able to get in Fitzgibbons, where you can get someone who you look at them, you look at what they're bringing to the table, and you say, you know, maybe there were size concerns. He's ballooned up. We want to track him through his senior season, see how he is, maybe extend an offer. Those are the type of answers that you're going to find in 2025. They're not the type of answers that, for, you know, a lot of our audience, maybe are going to be the most exciting, like a five star or like a transfer who had 12 sacks. But ultimately, these are the solutions that are left available. Other than that, you have to hope for a more robust transfer cycle at the end of next season for an immediate option next year, which obviously doesn't help them, or you're looking at 2026, again, a longer term. So in the immediate term, I know they don't have those concerns necessarily this season, but for 2025, you really almost have to kind of hope the portal falls your way, but do everything you can to find those late risers or those rising opportunities in 2025, or just lay groundwork to take like five, six guys in 2026 if those guys are there. It's got to be one of the two.
Yeah, I agree with all of that, you know. And when I started looking into Brad Fitzgibbon, who I spoke with yesterday, published an interview with him last night. You can find that at irishillustrated.com. A couple things stuck out to me right away. One was, or just sort of came to mind, I guess you could say. One was, last cycle of sort of like late June, July, that we weren't really expecting it, hadn't really ever talked about him beforehand. Tabron Benny Powell all of a sudden popped up and he camped. He did really well. They really needed, safeties, nickels, that sort of thing. And he did well in camp. They offered him and they landed him a year before that. Very similar thing. They had Adon Schuler at that time. Peyton Bowen was very much on the fence. We don't, they didn't know what was going to happen there, and they need another safety. Again, Ben Minnick, a kid a lot of people didn't really know about, all of a sudden he's visiting Notre Dame. Next thing you know, he's committing to Notre Dame. So I'm not saying that's going to happen with Brad, but that sort of came to mind, a Midwest kid who might be able to fill one of those spots, kid who, fits Notre Dame, makes sense. We'll see sort of what happens there. But when I,
Yeah,
yeah, when I, let's go ahead, Eric.
I was just gonna say, one thing that I think is a good perspective on guys like that too, because a lot of those names are guys that have ultimately come into Notre Dame and have put themselves in a position to be rotational or are starting to compete. But when they signed or when they were committed and everything else, it wasn't necessarily the most exciting. So one thing I think is a good perspective piece for people to realize. I think we look at these late risers and kids who get better in their senior year. A lot of folks look at them in the same sort of light as like NFL people look at guys who were only good in their senior year of college. One year of production, oh, I don't know, you know, he wasn't really that great. I looked at the film before. I think the key perspective to bear in mind for a lot of folks is that the development curve when guys are 17, 18, and 19 years old, and the gap it takes to go from good high school prospect to, you know, high-end college versus going from quality college or high-end college to like even functioning NFL player, those gaps are vastly different. It is a lot less of a task to go from, you know, 40% good to 80% good than it is to go from 90 to 94. That level of improvement is just different. So for guys like Fitzgibbons, when you monitor them, if the staff ultimately feels after a senior year that he has put on the weight and he has produced, I think that it's a good perspective to bear in mind for fans. Like, you know what? We know that maybe the junior film wasn't something that looked like, or the, excuse me, the sophomore film wasn't something that looked like Notre Dame quality, but this is a different player than he was. The element of growth that he's been able to undergo in this amount of time has been significant. And this is a vastly different prospect than the recruiting rankings even have really time to react to when guys rise that late. So it's
Yeah.
just an important perspective.
No, absolutely it is. And then when I spoke with him, it was just like, couldn't have been clearer that he loves Notre Dame. I remember, well, he's from Marist in Chicago, where Pat Coogan comes from. And I remember when I first spoke with Pat, he explained, like, hey, look, I grew up on Notre Dame football. Everyone in my family are Notre Dame football fans. I live south side Chicago, tons of Irish Catholics in our neighborhood, tons and tons of Notre Dame fans around here. And I brought that up to Brad, and he was like, yeah, it sounded like it was pretty much a very similar story sort of in his family. Not only that, but he's also a, 4.6 GPA, 4.0 weighted GPA, very, very bright kid. I watched his film, a couple of things that stuck out. I thought he was a heck of a player. Actually, it was You look more talented than I was expecting going into it. He gets off the ball really, really well. So really, really good get off, kind of first step, and very, very aggressive, high motor. He's getting off blocks. He's decent sort of lateral change of direction for a guy that size. But what I didn't know, I legitimately had no idea until I spoke with him. His last season, that film we're talking about and referring to, he was right around like 6'4", 6'5", and 250 pounds. He talked about like almost going crazy by like eating as much food as he could like possibly eat in tandem with lifting like crazy, and all of this is within like I'm sure nutritionists and all this sort of thing to put on size because he wants to maximize his, I guess, appeal on the recruiting trail. And now he said he's 280 pounds. I imagine he's probably around the 6'4" range. And then on top, yeah, so really good get off, good with his hands, high motor, can get off blocks. I mean, that's a good starting point. And I think if you're Notre Dame, you want to get him to a camp in June and sort of just take it from there, right? When I spoke with him, he had three official visits lined up: Michigan State, Kansas, and Iowa. And then he's hoping to make a decision at the end of June. He talked about how Notre Dame was, Al Washington specifically was very open with him and honest with him, like, hey, here's where we are. We're not offering you now, but we see you. We're watching you. They invited him to the spring game. He came to the spring game with his mom. They loved it. He fits in really well. So who knows? We'll see what happens. And it's increasingly difficult with the transfer portal. Sorry, the transfer portal, isn't it?
No, and I mean, when you have guys with his level of get off the ball, I mean, that's a skill set that I think is more difficult to coach than a lot of other ones. Just that natural speed, ability to anticipate get off.
Yeah,
There's
sure it is.
instincts in football that are film review related, right? Like when we talk about defensive back instincts of how they break on the ball and stuff, 90% of that is just anticipation of your preparation.
You talk about defensive backs. It's like you can teach them how to break on the ball. You can teach them how to get your hand into the catch point. You can teach them, when you should do this or when you should do that. But in that nanosecond, you can't really teach those instincts or the taking to that coaching and being able to apply it in like high pressure situations in a split second, right? And that's what you're referring to.
Yeah, and it's just that ability to fire off the ball, be physical, get your momentum moving forward, and not have even just a like you said, a nanosecond of difference where the offensive lineman ahead of you is able to get into his stance versus his foot still in the air and you've caught him off guard. Like these are just differences that give you more opportunities to be successful, and especially for a guy who is clearly adding a lot of weight, trying to be competitive and is serious about going to the next level. Dude, that is not easy to add weight like that in that amount of time. I
30
remember
pounds, 30 pounds.
when I did the official visit for Zeke Correll, back when I worked for Notre Dame, his dad told me about the process that Zeke had been undergoing to gain weight because that was an issue for him when he was younger and really throughout his Notre Dame career as well. And even back in high school, Zeke was waking up at like 3 or 4 in the morning to eat peanut butter sandwiches and down glasses of milk just so he had that stuff in his stomach and the weight gain would come. It was just like forcing food down at odd hours and things. But that's the sort of commitment that happens in the background with these prospects when they are ramping up like that. When they are going, hey, you know what? The target's 30 pounds. Well, then I'm going to move and I'm going to hit that. This is the process side of that. The less glorious side that we as fans don't really get to see. It all looks great when all of a sudden he's out there at 280, 285, on in the fall, and it's like, oh, look at all the work. Oh, he's did great. Trust me, it's a lot uglier and probably a lot less palatable than it looks like once he gets on the field, but it's a testament to that young man and the commitment that he's putting forward.
No doubt. And just you talking about that, waking up in the middle of the night eating reminds me. Okay, so a guy, he was a dad of an old teammate I had. I won't say what team it was, but he played for a prominent SEC school, and this would have been like early 70s, I believe. And he said that he was an offensive lineman. He said they would fatten them up with beer and ice cream was the diet back then. I don't think the coaches were, assigning this task, but it was sort of the regionally known way of sacking on the size. So yeah, he won an Orange Bowl, actually, that guy. Anyways,
Sounds like he had a great time doing it too.
yeah, he did. He did. He ended up becoming a professional wrestler. This guy is quite a story. I'll tell you all about it another time. But yeah, I think that pretty much wraps it up for us this week. Myself, Kevin Sinclair, and Eric Thomas signing off, tracking the trail at Irish Illustrated at irishillustrated.com. Thanks for tuning in.